Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.
Hello and welcome to Beneath the Surface. Glad you could join us in our fourth installation of the Creed, Beneath the Surface. Paul Morano here with my very special guest today, Father Tony Blunt. Father Blunt, welcome.
Thank you, Paul. You and I were roommates a long, long time ago.
We were back in the yeah. That was quite a trip. We lived together for about 2 or 3 years back in Tampa, Florida, where I used to live, and where you and your brother Father Jim was brought up. You were brought up in Tampa, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Went to University of South Florida there for a little bit, but welcome to Beneath the Surface. Glad we could finally get you on Beneath the Surface. It's really an honor to have you. Now, you are a SALT priest, not that you assault anybody, but you are an SOLT priest, Society of Our Lady of the Blessed of the Most Holy Trinity, a religious order. You want to say a little bit about that?
Well, it's a wonderful, beautiful community founded by Father Jim Flanagan in 1958, consisting of all three vocations, right, of ministers, priests, of religious, especially consecrated men and women, and families. It's really a beautiful community that works to spread, you know, it's a beautiful communion of all these brothers and sisters together, working under Our Lady's protection for the kingdom of God.
Excellent. Now, you are stationed, Father Blunt, at Most Holy Redeemer Parish in Detroit, Michigan now. Yes,
right here in the heart of Detroit, basically. It was called Southwest Detroit. It's also called Mexican Town for many decades now. It's a wonderful place to live.
And you are fluent in Spanish?
Yes, you would have to be fluent in Spanish.
Yes, because you have been also stationed in Central America, right?
7.5 years I worked in Guatemala and Belize, my first assignment, lovely assignment, where I used to take care of 30 villages, using a horse and a canoe at times to get to them.
Wow, how fun.
And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, as you know, we are continuing our series on the Creed Beneath the Surface. And this is installment, our episode number 4. Our first episode was simply the first two words of the Creed, which is I believe. And in that episode, we spoke about faith and belief and the distinction between faith, reason, and science, and how they all are different ways to get to the one truth with a capital T, who ultimately is God. The next episode, we talked about in one God. And so in that episode, we talked about monotheism and how it's different from polytheism and pantheism, and the distinctions between, you know, Christian understanding of the one God versus Jewish and Muslim, and a whole bunch of other good things like that. And then in the third episode, we talked about the Father Almighty, which is the next line in the Creed, the first person of God, and how he is maker of heaven and earth. So we talked about the first person of God and how he's creator and, you know, what he created and why he created it, which brings us to the fourth installment of the Creed Beneath the Surface with my wonderful guest here, Father Tony Blunt. And we're going to be focusing on the line of the creed, or the phrase of the creed, that simply says, of all things visible and invisible, this is what the Father created. All things, first of all, that are both visible, that we can experience through our five senses, and invisible, which we don't have access to with our limited five senses. And so, Father Tony, let me begin. We're going to spend a lion's share of the show on the invisible world that God created. But my first two questions relate to the visible world that God created. And I'm going to ask you a question to start things off that I actually asked my guest last show. See if you have a different take on it, because it's a speculative question. Since God is Trinity and he is completely happy and fulfilled in himself for all eternity, why did he create anything?
That's a very good question, Paul. It's a deep question. It's an important question because it explains us rather well. So in other words, there's the old Latin expression, bonum diffusivum esse, that what is good diffuses itself. You see this even in human realities. Like someone who's truly loving and filled with goodness, they tend to extend themselves, like your grandmother loving to make food for you, no matter whether you're hungry or not. She has to do it.
Yeah.
Bonum diffusivum esse. The good diffuses itself. God had no need of us. And this is very important because it means that his love for us is simply gratuitous. In other words, there's no need. God has no needs. So why does he create? Okay, yeah. Then now, what is the motive? The only motive for creation then would have to be this, that God in his overflowing goodness, this is the way overflowing goodness is, desires that as many, many others, countless others, will share in this infinite happiness. So God's reason for creating us can only be love. There is no other reason.
So goodness by its very nature overflows from the being that is good to other things by its very nature.
Yes.
Okay. And so it is fitting that God, even though he's fully complete and fulfilled in himself as Trinity, would create a universe. It's very fitting for him being all good.
Oh yes, it's like it's fitting for an artist to make a painting, and out of his, you know, what he possesses within himself, he longs to bestow this beauty on the world.
Okay.
And God is like that also. He wants to share his beauty and love with as many as possible.
I have a question that I've had since maybe I was a teenager. And I have a theory about it, but I want your take on this. We have a vast universe here. And with modern science, we've been able to at least understand more and more and more of it, even though we're just at the surface. We humans only know of, through our, you know, the limited understanding that we have, we only know of a little bit of it, and we can only live here on Earth. Why all the rest of it? What's the purpose?
It's without end.
Since
we can't know it.
Yeah, since we can't know it, and all we know is this, at least at this time in our history of humanity.
Okay, that is that, you see, love doesn't count the cost. It doesn't calculate. And calculation is not part of love. Love would be the absence of calculation. For instance, here's an example. When I was born, I was the seventh child of my mother. Eight children, I was the seventh.
Okay.
And my parents at the time were very poor. But my dad bought my mother 7 dozen roses in honor of my birth. Not 7 roses. Now, if you think of it, 7 roses would have made the point.
Yeah, I think so. One rose could have.
Yeah, it made the point. Seven roses. Why 7 dozen? Now, granted, it was a beautiful baby. That's obvious.
What happened to him as an adult?
But yeah. 7 dozen, because love doesn't count the cost. And it's just, you know, this is the way God is. He's not calculating. And this is a good lesson for us. His love is super abundant. Like, you might say, the wedding feast at Cana. My goodness. You know, one of those containers in John chapter 2 those verses there contain 15 or 20 gallons. Look at the amount of wine we're talking about for people who've already been there and had drunk quite enough already.
Yeah. But the 7 dozen roses in your example were for your mother, even though they were perhaps superfluous or they weren't necessary. They were all for...
Too much. Yeah. It was
too much, but it was for your mother. So are you saying that this entire universe is for us?
Well, I would say that in a certain sense, you could say that. In other words, in his God and his creation, look, every snowflake, they say, is, you've heard this before, that every snowflake is unique.
Yes.
How could that be? I always think if I were God, I would make one snowflake. That would be sufficient.
Yeah.
But this is the way the Lord is. Yes, he would do that for us out of tremendous kindness.
Well,
you're asking the question, perhaps, I understand the question, could be, is there anyone else out there?
Well, before we even get to that, if it's just for us, how do we have access to it? You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Well, now there's the question, do we need to have access to it? Well, we're exploring it. It's a beautiful playground, you could say. We're exploring it. It brings us endless delight and joy. It's a reminder, one might say, too, of this vastness of our God.
It's funny you say that, because you're sort of touching on a theory that I've had for a long time, and that is that God did make the universe as our playground. And I think that Eden, that he gave the first two humans, that paradise, when we were ordered to cultivate the earth, I think once we cultivated the earth, we would have cultivated the whole universe with his help. And I think it would have been our playground, the entire universe. But sin got in the way. And we remained here on this earth, which isn't a perfect place anymore, obviously. But I think once the resurrection occurs and, you know, the glorification of the bodies and the transformation of the universe happens, I think then sin, of course, is out of the way, that we will again have the entire universe as our playground. What do you think?
Well, okay, I would just look at it. We can consider that. I would look at it in this way, that those two things I said, that, okay, the superabundance of God's charity, his kindness, it doesn't have to be exhausted. In other words, that the whole point is that it's inexhaustible. Even on a natural level, it's just ridiculous. I mean, it's so huge what he has done for us. Mm. And this is good for us to see, you know, it's good for us to see that, you know, this vastness of the universe, I think, is important for us to grasp. So God's majesty, you might say, it points to God's majesty, and we need that reminder constantly.
Yes, yes. All right. Of all that is visible and invisible, I think a lot of people recite the creed every Sunday, and they say that, but they don't really think about the fact that there's an invisible part of creation, and it's a very important invisible portion of the creation. Let's talk about the world of angels. What is an angel?
Well, an angel, in the hierarchy of being, we have an hierarchy of being. So the angels are pure spirits who don't have bodies. And somebody once said that the theme song of the angels would be, "I ain't got nobody."
Because, I ain't got nobody. Nobody cares for me.
So there's pure spirits without a physical function, higher than us in the realm of being.
Somewhere between us and God in their hierarchy of being. They're pure spirit, and yet they're persons. They're not human persons, but they're angelic persons.
That's important to realize that person, you know, there are three kinds of persons.
Yeah.
Human persons, angelic persons, and divine persons.
Right.
It's good for us to know that there's more than one kind of personal subject.
And if that...
I get the question.
Okay. I said that if we are made in the image of God, and because we're persons, we're made in the image of God, would you say that angels also are made in the image of God?
Yes. I think you can say that in a certain sense. Yes, you can say that. Yes, because they have, you know, the image of God in part... granted, the image of God, we look at it in different ways. Certainly, part of what it means is we are made, we can know and love God as he knows and loves himself. And so certainly being in the image of God is that. You could add more, though, you know, as St. John Paul II does in his Theology of the Body.
Yeah.
And that's very, very fascinating things about.
Well, that actually brings up another question that I have, because in one sense, you're saying that we humans image God in as much as we have intellect and will. We can know and love like he does. But there's another sense that we image God, and we image the Trinitarian essence of God in as much as we are family. We have father, mother, child. We have lover, beloved, and love, which of course image the Trinitarian aspect of God, who is lover, beloved, and love as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So that's another way that we image God as family. My question to you is, how would angels image God in that respect, the Trinitarian aspect of God?
The way they could do that is, the angels, as one theologian said, are the most neglected members of the communion of saints.
Neglected by us.
Yes.
Okay, yes.
So if they live in communion with God and each other, so certainly they're already, you know, there's a certain sense that they're reflecting the God, and they must do so, the God who lives in perfect, who is communion, communion of persons. So in some sense, they would also do that. However, one thing they cannot do, and of course, as you know, the saints would say the angels envy us, which is really a remarkable thing. And here we mean holy envy, because you can also talk about envy in another sense, which also should be addressed. But they envy us because of God becoming one of us and not one of them, lovingly becoming one of us. Imagine. And so this makes the image of God in a different, whole different reality here. What happens when God takes our image?
Right.
Then what happens? That means that human nature is raised up to a level that's unimaginable. Human nature now sits at the right hand of God and Jesus.
So right. Yet angelic nature does not.
Right.
Which brings me to my next question. If angels are made in the image of God in as much as they're persons, why didn't God also become an angel?
That is left into the mystery of God himself. I don't think we know the answer to that question. But he does choose the least, and he exalts them. The Lord tends to, you could say that his conduct is spoken about in the Magnificat of Our Lady, that he raises the lowly. He loves to do this. Mm. And here we are on a lower, certainly on a realm of a lower nature than, as far as persons, we're the lowest kind of persons.
Right.
And yet we're raised to the highest level. That would seem to be fitting with the way God does
things. And of course, another reason God became man is to save us from our sins, because we sinned and rebelled against God. But so did the angels, at least some of them. Some of the angels became demons. So at least you have to throw out the question, why didn't God become an angel at the moment that they were created, when they had that yes or no decision? Why didn't God become an angel to stop them from rejecting him?
Well, that's a good question. They had this refers to what's called as the mysterium iniquitatis that St. Paul refers to.
Right.
The mystery of iniquity, which we cannot fathom completely in this life, maybe ever. I mean, it's quite a mystery. But, one thing you might want to note is that God became man not before, but after we had sinned.
Right.
Because it was a possibility of redemption. Loving redemption. With the angels, as you know, once the sin of the angels, because of their nature, was a sin from which there is no possibility of repentance.
Correct.
Because of their perfect knowledge, their knowledge.
Right. So they did not, they had perfect knowledge and will. They were in union with God, and yet they sinned anyway. And since they don't have a physical nature, they don't grow and they can't repent. And hence, they made an eternal decision when they made that decision.
Oh, yes,
right?
because the devil, he knew all the consequences. Lucifer knew all the consequences to the nth degree and forever, you could say, of his decision, and still made it. Whereas we are so ignorant. This is why our Lord could say to his Father on the cross, forgive them, they don't know what they do.
Right.
And that is a very very important reality. We really don't know what we do. We're quite dumb, actually.
Yeah, especially after we left Eden, the intellect got a lot darker than it originally supposedly was offered by God's grace. So why don't you talk about a little bit about, if, do you know anything about Aquinas' understanding of angels, how each angel is its own species?
Yeah, the ancient philosophical dictum is matter is the matter has to do with differentiation. So in other words, only matter differentiates a species. So for instance, rabbits, you know, you could say you have such a thing as the essence of a rabbit, but that rabbit, the essence of rabbit is multiplied through matter. And goodness right. knows, rabbits multiply rather quickly.
So in other words, you have the notion or the essence rabbit, and then you have many rabbits underneath that are sharing that essence because we're physical and we can reproduce.
Matter is the principle of differentiation. That's what I
right.
want to say.
Of distinct individuals within a species.
Yes, yes.
So a physical species can reproduce itself, and hence you can have many of these individuals in a species.
Same essence or same nature, but multiplied
yeah. right.
for reproduction. Right.
So since you're saying, since angels are pure spirit and they're not physical, obviously they don't reproduce. So when you create an angel, that's all you have for that species, that one individual, yes?
Yes, yes. So each angel, right, is its own species. It's its own specific difference.
Right. So generically, we call them angels because the word angel means messenger?
That's right. It means messenger.
Messenger of God. So they generically, they are spiritual persons because they have intellect and will without bodies. That's what they have in common. But in their essence, they each have a species unto themselves. For people listening, perhaps an analogy would be if God created one rabbit, one antelope, one elephant, one human, one oak tree, etc. All of these species of plants and animals that we see on this earth, if God only created one, that's what it's like for an angel. An angel has its own essence, yet there are many of them. Yes?
Yes, yes. Many angels. Yeah, it is a fascinating thing. You have the same, you know, it goes way back to Aristotle, the idea of the genera or the genus, and yeah. then the specific difference in that genus.
Right.
So you have the genus of rodent,
yeah.
and rabbits are one specific difference or a species of rodent.
Right. And you have rats and you have mouse.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. You have various kinds. With angels, you have the genera. But each angel is a specific difference all by himself, you know.
Right.
Not multiplied.
Absolutely fascinating. I love that.
It is very fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Why did angels rebel?
Okay. The answer given by some of the saints, I mean, the traditional answer, you could say, it has to do with the book of Isaiah and the king of Tyre, I think. But at any rate, the answer in the book of Isaiah, and it's applied to the devil with the famous words, non serviam, you know, I will not serve, I will put my throne, I will go up to the Most High and put my throne at the level of the Most High. So they're famous words from Isaiah applied to Lucifer, I think correctly. And what the saints interpreted this to mean was this, at least St. Maximian Kolbe said this, that God revealed to the angels his plan to become one of us. The whole thing is very mysterious. Mm. This is kind of a Franciscan answer, by the way, because Maximian Kolbe was a Franciscan.
Okay.
There's a Franciscan answer and there's a Dominican answer to these things.
By the way, just to stop you for 1 second, the Franciscans believed that, generally speaking, that God would have become man even if man didn't sin. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay.
It's a very beautiful, lovely thing to say. Mysterious. At any rate,
Dominicans didn't think so.
They said, we don't know that.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really about what their answer to that.
Okay.
But, so according to Maximian Kolbe, St. Maximian Kolbe, he said that God revealed this plan of becoming one of us to the angels, and then that Satan was appalled. Somehow it bothered him that that God would become not a seraphim, because they say that the devil was of the highest sort of angel called the seraphim, the burning ones.
Okay.
Not become a seraphim, but become a lowly, slimy, you might say, human being. Beyond the devil, it really bothered him to serve the one born of woman who would be God. And so what Max Ben Colby said, of course, his non-Sirvium was in that direction. But then that when he saw Eve in the garden, he thought that that was the woman.
Mm. Okay.
And so he went after her.
I gotcha. So that's one school of thought, that he went after the woman who was Eve, and he thought he had a victory, but obviously he didn't.
Yeah, it might explain why he went to the woman first. I mean, you could look at other anthropological reasons or things like that. Right. But one possibility is, why did he go to the woman first and not the man who was created first? You can say, well, he's going through the woman to the man. Well, yeah, that's possible. But it's also this thought that he was looking for the woman.
Hmm.
And that is a constant theme throughout Scripture. You know, Genesis 3:15.
Right, right.
God, you know, the Protoevangelium. Enmity between you and the woman. And it gets repeated constantly, even to the book of Revelation, the woman.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something to consider.
Yeah, it is. So you mentioned Satan, who was Lucifer, which means light. After rejecting God, he became the adversary of God and mankind. And that's what the word Satan means, right? Adversary?
Yes, Satan can be adversary, or it can mean an accuser.
Accuser. Okay, adversary, accuser. How do we know that a third of all the angels rejected God? That seems to be the common common belief of most Catholics. How do we know that?
A book, Revelation, chapter 12, speaks about that, you know, that this dragon, there's no doubt that the dragon in Revelation and the serpent in Genesis are the same.
Yeah.
So the dragon's tail swept a third of the stars from the sky has always been interpreted to be a reference to that fact, that a third of the angels, whatever that means,
yeah, you
know, that number signifies how many that is, but a third of them lost their place.
They lost their place in heaven. Now, here's another distinction that I think it would be nice to make. You know, there's a tradition that the angels were swept down to the earth and you know, they prowl about the world seeking the ruin of human souls. But they're also in hell. So just to make this very simplistic, are demons, the angels that rejected God, which are demons, are they now in hell or are they on earth roaming to try to destroy humans? Or both?
Well, I mean, I'm going to say, Paul, that I would suppose it to be both. I mean, it's a good question. Do they leave hell? Do they get a break? I mean, that's a good question. I mean, they're damned no matter what they do. And so when they come, but there has to be some sort of spatial question. So, I mean, they do seem to be here on earth because we see it in the Gospels. These possessed men, for example, various ones, right? In the synagogue, one with all the pigs, no doubt clearly possessed by these demons or inhabiting them, and the demons even begging not to be told to go, which is always very fascinating. They don't want to go, the demons.
They don't want to go where?
It would seem, they don't want to be cast out of, for instance, the man with the 5,000 pigs, the Gerasene demoniac. They don't want to be cast out. And they seem to be somehow better off in this man than they would be outside of this man.
Well, they say that, and you know probably a lot better than I do because you have a brother that's an exorcist priest. But they say that sometimes, you know, it takes many episodes of praying over people in order to release demons.
Yes, that's right. They don't want to leave. So my point there is that there is some sense where, yes, they're in hell, and yet they're also on this earth, and they seem to want to, they want to bring us a damnation.
Mm.
You know, misery loves company.
Yes.
They want to bring us with them to that terrible state.
And so how they do that is traditionally there are three levels of demonic activity with regard to their, you know, influencing us. The first one is temptation.
Yes. Yeah, temptation. I mean, the devil does tempt us. I mean, one could say temptation comes from the world, the flesh, and the devil.
Right.
But one would have to say that the devil is behind temptation, because temptation is always based, it seems to me, on a lie.
Mm.
It's always about a lie at the heart of it. And the devil is a liar from the beginning. And so every temptation, you could say, you can sense the forked tongue of the serpent coming at you with his lying. He's lying to us about, always, it's a lie. The temptation, for instance, to whatever it might be, infidelity, alcohol, you know, getting drunk, right. Cheating, lying. I mean, he's certainly lying to say to us something like this: what you're looking for, you will find, and I will give it to you. Now, the same lie they told our first parents is endlessly repeated, and we keep falling for it.
Yeah, and very often we see in our limited sight things as apparent goods, but in the bigger picture, of course, they're bad for us. And once, you know, once the world or the flesh starts getting us going, the devil is right there to pounce, isn't he?
Well, it's more than that. He's behind these structures of sin, you could say. I mean, he's behind this worldliness, you know, fathering it, so to speak.
Yeah. Were there, so in other words, he fathers it, but he also was the instigator of it. And this goes back to the story of the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
Without his instigation, we may not have fallen as a species.
That's through the envy of the devil, death entered the world. The Book of Wisdom tells us. So without it, yes, his instigation, I don't see how the fall would have taken place. We were instigated by him. That's another good reason why the devil's fall is unforgivable and ours is so forgivable.
Mm. Why? Because we were seduced by...
We were seduced.
A higher free-willed creature, and they were not.
We were perversely seduced on purpose.
Right, right.
And he was not.
Hmm. So then, those human beings that reject God in this life, and they die unrepentantly, they exist for all eternity with these demons, in the same realm, if you will, of these devils. Yes?
God forbid, but it's the truth. If we die in unrepented mortal sin, we will be lost forever. But it should be stated, of course, that that God doesn't desire this. We
right.
all know that, but it's still good to say it again.
It's always good to say that.
God has no desire for this. In fact, nothing causes him more, nothing's more horrible. Not even one human soul. He doesn't want anyone damned, and he would do anything. In fact, he did anything. And he would do it again. But he would do anything to save one human soul, because he has infinite kindness. But the difficulty is that the mystery of freedom, we get to the mystery of freedom, that love is free, and it has to be so, or would no longer be love if it's not chosen.
Right.
So the Lord has to respect our freedom because we're in his image and likeness. He must respect us.
You know, funny, a lot of people say, well, why did God, you know, create us free if he knew that we were going to fall? You have to create us free in order to have a real relationship with us, because God is personal. And if you don't create us as persons, then we don't have free will. Could have created robots or just simply animals, but he wanted that personal relationship with us. And hence, that personal relationship has to freely say yes, right, to God, who is the great proposer. God proposes, and we respond. All we had to do is say yes with our lives and our will.
Well, yes, I mean, ultimately it comes down to that, to the word yes. I mean, it's a mysterious thing, but it comes down to the word yes and the word no. And most of us through our lives, you know, we don't say a perfect yes. God forbid anyone should say a perfect no.
Yeah.
But
like you said, though, the angels who became demons.
They did say a perfect no.
Perfect no, yes.
Yeah, but God forbid anyone else should.
Yes.
And, you know, so I like what Pope Benedict said in his encyclical on hope, which is always worth reading and rereading 100 times.
How many?
Maybe five. But Spe Salve.
500,
it's incredible encyclical about hope. Everyone should read it. I say without exception, because it's one of the greatest, it's just an astounding document.
What
Benedict says very thoughtfully is this. He's referring to the words yes and no.
Okay.
and that he says few people at the end of life have said a perfect yes to God. I think it's a very honest thing to say, you know, that few of us have said a perfect yes. There are some who have.
Now, when he says that, is he talking about on our deathbed, or is he talking about throughout our lives, our cumulative yes or no? Which one?
I would say it's both, because on our deathbeds, our cumulative effect, it has some effect on us. In other words, we're damaged goods in some way. So when we leave this life,
yeah,
are we ourselves a perfect yes when we leave this life to God, or are we a little bit selfish still?
Mm.
And yeah. I would say the answer is yes, that we're very usually a bit selfish squirrel, most of us. We're not ready for heaven. It's just the way it is. This is why, you know, priests said, it's generally, you know, I'm going to say what the Pope says. That most people go to purgatory.
Yeah. So nothing imperfect can enter heaven because
this is a whole other question. I know that. However, he also says this: we may suppose that few people, not too many, hopefully, please God, close the door to God in an absolute sense. We hope that it's few people who do this horrible thing, but many, many, many people are damaged goods. In other words, purgatory has many levels.
Okay.
In other words, those who are almost ready for heaven because their yes was 90% complete, if not more. And it's obvious in their character.
Mother Teresa, for example?
Mother Teresa. I have a feeling it applies to her. I know it does.
Yeah.
But how many of us are of that quality? We're just not quite there, you know. But we're trying. And so purgatory is a tremendous doctrine of the church. And doctrine and so necessary. Hell is for those, please God, it doesn't happen. The Pope says we may suppose even that not too many make this terrible choice of the absolute forever decision to reject God. And may that be the case, but that's what we would hope for.
The early church kind of had a different, sort of the opposite take on that. They took, the narrow path that Jesus spoke about in the Gospels and really thought that only a few would enter heaven and the majority of humanity would enter hell. It seems like in modern times, that sort of attitude has flipped. And most people think most people go to heaven and only a relative few go to hell. And I think in the secular world, you have this notion that everybody goes to heaven regardless of what they do. So the spectrum has been all over the place when it comes to that, hasn't it?
It has been. But I think that Pope Benedict's answer is very important. What he speaks about is purgatory, and no one talks about that. That most people probably go to purgatory. And I have a feeling that is my hope. Let's put it that way. That is my hope. Please, God, that we don't want anyone to be lost. It's unimaginably horrible. Unimaginably horrible.
Really quick. The horror is both spiritual and physical.
That's right. And so, the pain of loss and the pain of sense, something quite, quite unimaginably horrible. I mean, the pain of loss itself, meaning the loss of all that's worth living for, the loss of God himself. C.S. Lewis describes this rather well in his book, The Great Divorce, which is a really good contemplation of this very topic.
Yeah.
And he talks about hell and about, he actually names somebody, I don't know if he's right about that, someone I know from history, but this person's supposedly in a house. He says in hell, basically the people are accelerating away from each other at light speed forever.
Mm. Hmm. Yeah.
Forever more and more lonely.
The opposite of unity, the opposite of love.
Yeah. The opposite of communion, right.
Yeah.
They want isolation to the extreme, never ending and more and more of it as time goes, as it goes on.
So they're isolated from each other, but most importantly, of course, they're isolated from the source of all life, joy, happiness, which is God, forever without hope.
Yes. Yes, as it says in Dante's Inferno.
Yeah.
At the entrance to hell, abandon all hope, ye who enter here.
Right.
So please God, that doesn't happen too often.
Yeah. Part of the world of the all things visible and invisible, part of the invisible world also is that constitutive part of ourselves, which is spiritual, that we call a soul, which is disembodied at the moment of death. I want to say a little bit about the spiritual soul and its experience, the moments after death and what it goes through as a disembodied soul.
Right. Okay. Well, death, of course, is defined as separation of the soul from the body.
Right.
And what the church has always taught is a beautiful, important document called Benedictus Deus by Pope Boniface VIII, I think it is. When he describes this, at the moment of death, the soul is immediately judged. Now, I must say, those are frightening words. You know, I mean, they're good words, but they should make us sit up and think. And people don't think about this sufficiently. As you said, in the modern world, everyone thinks they're going to heaven.
Right.
They never consider the fact of the four last things.
Yes.
And the four last things, as you know, need to be considered fervently, and even though it may be challenging,
continuously. Every day they should be in our mind.
Yes,
which is death, judgment, heaven, and hell.
Right, these need to be considered. And what concerns me a little bit: people do not consider judgment, and it should be considered a lot, because at the moment of death, Pope John the 23rd had a nice little poem. You've heard this poem?
I don't think so.
He said, "Death, than which nothing is more certain. Judgment, than which nothing is more strict. Hell, than which nothing is more terrible. Heaven, than which nothing is more delightful." At the moment of death comes the judgment. In other words, the personal judgment, the immediate judgment, the particular judgment.
Right.
At the moment of death, where, of course, you know, and this is, by the way, we should think about this also, I would say, lovingly, even though it's a challenge to us, okay?
Yeah.
The infinite love and truth, he's looking at me. Infinite love and truth is looking at me now, but then, and at that judgment, he's going, in other words, we want to be sincere with ourselves and not, you know, even now, so that when the judgment does come, I am totally ready in the face of God to face that judgment, right?
Yes.
And somebody wants, go ahead, Paul.
I was just going to say, we always should be prepared for death, at least. We
prepare for death.
Try to be that in that state.
And one could add this: what the catechism says is that confession anticipates the judgment in a good way. So going to confession, you know, remember that in confession, the priest makes a judgment.
Yeah.
And that is related to the final judgment. But that judgment the priest makes in confession is a wonderful judgment. He has to make a judgment, yes, but the judgment is so beautiful. And I mean, he has to make a judgment whether or not this person actually is sorry for their sins in some way.
Right.
He has to make some judgment. In other words, if the person said, "I don't want to go into all this now with you, it's not the subject," but I just want to say that going to confession is very beautiful and important, and has a lot to do with the final judgment.
Oh yeah, it's everything. If you're, what gets in the way of the fullness of God in our lives is sin, and what cleanses us of that is Christ through the sacrament of confession. So what could be more important than that?
Yes, if you go to confession regularly, and you're going to be so blessed. Final, because the judgment is, in a certain sense, you're doing away with the final judgment almost, so to speak. Yeah. In other words, you're already facing it. And God's mercy is overcoming it while there's time.
So in a nutshell, when the spirit or the soul separates from the body, faces God, the individual disembodied soul will know his eternal destiny at that point. We won't talk about
instantaneously.
Now there's another judgment that we'll talk about later on in the creed with regard to the resurrection of the body and the general judgment when Christ comes back again. But we'll talk about that in length when we get there. So heaven, this will be our last question or our last topic. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard the wonders that God has in store for those who love him. Want to comment on what heaven is like?
Well, from my limited perspective, but, yes. Well, Yeah, exactly. But since I has not seen and nor has hindered man's imagination, boy, there's a lot to say there, Paul. I mean, it's Saint Augustine would say, whatever wonderful thing you can think of, you have to say it's not that, it's beyond that.
Yes.
You can't imagine this infinite joy, this infinite happiness.
So it's really the ultimate fulfillment of the human person, the end for which we were made. Union, full union with God without anything getting in the way.
Well, it's what every man and every person was made for.
Right.
Because, you know, if you ask anyone, what do you want? Do you want to be happy? And how happy do you want to be? You can ask anyone on the street this question.
Yeah.
How happy do you want to be? And you can say, do you think the word infinite applies to your desire for happiness or something? And they would say, yes, that's exactly what I want. You do. How did I know that I never even met you before.
Yeah.
We all have this same desire for infinite happiness.
Unending happiness, unending joy.
Infinite and that never ends. So imagine this is what heaven is. It is precisely that, in seeing God face to face, eternal, a joy we cannot even grasp. It's so astounding. In fact, this life considers in getting ourselves ready to encounter that kind of happiness, which sounds funny, but it's the truth.
And it's not only going to be happiness in the fullness of the presence of God, but in the fullness of the presence of the saints. And just to bring back what we were talking about earlier, of the angels. The angels will be citizens of heaven. They are citizens of heaven now.
What I was saying was, our life here on earth is really, in a sense, a getting ready for this infinite joy, which it's so astounding. You've really got to be ready for such joy.
Yeah, you have to be prepared, right?
It's so astounding. Yeah. And as you were saying, with our God, yes, and at the same time, union with all of our brothers and sisters in heaven. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not going to remain for all eternity with just a soul. We are body soul composites, but we'll get to that later after the resurrection.
Right.
So heaven is God, obviously, and in union with God are his angels and his saints, and it's unending joy, unending happiness, without any suffering, without any death, without any pain, and all of that. So in this, all that is seen and unseen, this seems to be its very end and purpose, to be in union with God. On that note, do you have any final thoughts or words with regard to our topic tonight? And I'll give you the last word.
Okay, I think one good thing to remember, the Catechism tells us, it has to do with one of the councils, said that God made the spiritual and material creation at the same time, at the same moment.
Right.
And then only afterwards, the word is diende, did he make the human person, who is in a certain sense, a combination of both worlds.
Yes.
That's a lovely truth.
Spiritual and physical, heaven and earth, yes.
Yes, we're a combination of those realities. I think it's a really beautiful thing to consider. You know?
We really bridge heaven and earth because we're part animal and we're spiritual, like the angels. Yeah.
Yes. So the angelic creation is important for us too, from that point of view, because they remind us of who we are to some extent.
We, of course, it's important to continue a relationship with the angels while we're here on earth, including our guardian angel. Yes.
Oh yes, and yes, we should do this, and we don't do it sufficiently.
Yeah.
And that's why I said they're the most neglected members of the community of saints.
Agreed.
Including our guardian angel. Now, as you know, certain holy men and women, Padre Pio is a good example. And also, though, I should say, Saint Jose Maria Escriva had a tremendous relationship with their guardian angel. And it was really a lovely thing. Escriva had a beautiful friendship with his guardian angel. In fact, a mob tried to kill him in Madrid, on the steps of some government building during the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, yeah?
One of the worst times in church history was the Spanish Civil War. And they tried to kill him. And, well, here's what happened. In his diary, he used to refer to himself as Mangy Donkey.
Okay.
That was his personal nickname for himself, to give himself humility. He referred to himself as Mangy Donkey. That was his nickname. And only in his diary, of course. But when these men were going to kill him,
yeah,
they killed thousands of priests and nuns. Suddenly, out of nowhere, this youth showed up. Giant man. It was a young man, though. Blonde-haired, I think. But he showed up out of nowhere and chased these men off. And as he was running away, he turned around and yelled out, "Mangy donkey! Mangy donkey!" And he was gone.
All right.
So that was his guardian angel. He understood that to be his guardian angel who had come to assist him.
Okay, gotcha.
But this happened to many. Yeah. This happened to, of course, the saints had this experience. Padre Pio, in a special way, had that relationship.
Very cool. Yeah, we've got to wrap it up now. But thank you, Father Anthony Blunt, for being with us today on Beneath the Surface. Great conversation. Hope to have you back soon.
Thank you, Paul. It's nice being with you.
All right, Father Anthony Blunt, Paul Morano, you're listening to Beneath the Surface, and we will be back for another installment next week. Have a great week, everybody.
I feel silly trying to make up prayers myself. My mind starts to wander as I'm speaking to God. I just don't have time to pray. Do you recognize yourself in any of these statements? If so, we have a book for you. In Pray Fully, best-selling authors Michelle Fanley and Emily Jaminet share the rewards and frustrations of their own prayer journeys to create a practical guide that combines testimonies, tips, and journaling space to help you spend quality time with God. Whether you want to learn how to pray aloud in a group or stop your mind from wandering during prayer, Fanley and Jaminet have practical advice and the real-life experience to help you overcome obstacles to everyday prayer. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LEARN2PRAY, that's LEARN2PRAY, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.